This is WJBC This Week.
It's a very sad day here at the power station.
The number one challenge in front of us here in Central Illinois is jobs. This is just not good news.
Our enrollment probably will go down, but we may also see an increase in low-income students, too, because of it.
I hope to have a budget. Think about this. A real budget signed by the governor, an agreement within a week.
I felt we took a step, a big step backwards, not forwards.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, a major employer announces plans to shut down next year. We get a reaction to Exelon's plans to retire the Clinton nuclear plant. Governor Rauner scolds lawmakers over the state's failure to pass a budget by the May deadline, and a local lawmaker shares his thoughts on the impacts. The new director of the Illinois High School Association discusses player safety amid growing fears about concussions. The first and to this point only athletic director at Heartland Community College explains how he was essentially forced out of a job, plus an Illinois Wesleyan coach becomes a national champion yet again. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. It can't be called a surprise. Owners of the Clinton nuclear plant had for months been pleading for state reforms to make nuclear energy more economically viable. Those pleas fell on deaf ears in Springfield, so Exelon announced this week that it would be retiring its plants in Clinton next year and Cordova in the Quad Cities in 2018. We talked with the spokesman for the Clinton Power Station, Brett Nauman, this week. Do you think lawmakers in Springfield took this seriously? I mean, businesses threatened to leave the state or close all the time.
No, we had a Senate hearing on this. We know that they were looking at the legislation that we put forward. It just, the progress that was made was not sufficient. And Exelon, it put the May 31st date out there earlier this month, and they're honoring that date, and we're going to move forward with the early retirement of both Clinton Power Station and Quad Cities Generation Station.
And perhaps a situation where they were so caught up in this budget situation that maybe this got overlooked. Was there any consideration that maybe once that got resolved, there would be some resolution that this would be taken off of the back burner?
Well, you know, Eric, you know, we've been talking about this issue for the last 2 years, and what it comes down to is Exelon can't keep taking the financial losses that both of these plants have been experiencing over the last 7 years. Like you said, the two plants have lost $800 million over the last 7 years, and, you know, when we're talking about a publicly traded company, publicly traded companies just can't afford to take those type of losses year in, year out. We're looking at it losing another $140 million next year. So when it comes to it, we had to take those financial decisions into consideration when making this very hard decision. And I just say that it's a very sad day here at Clinton Power Station. Me and 700 employees did not want this to happen, and it has happened. And we're not handling it great. We wish that something could have been done to keep the plant operating. We feel that the legislation was introduced. It was a very common sense approach to trying to keep these plants open, and unfortunately, no action was taken.
Would have added a fee to utility bills in the state and provided for more solar energy opportunities in the state. What does this say about the future of nuclear power?
I mean, it says that the nuclear industry as a whole has issues that it's facing, economic issues. We're sitting on oceans of natural gas due to the fracking that's been taking place, and then we have a heavily subsidized wind power. So this is stuff that the industry is going to have to continue to deal with, and these closures will probably not be the last. We'll probably see more closures in the future because of these market issues. And when we have President Obama saying that we have to reduce carbon emissions in the upcoming decades, having these plants around is vitally important. So it's something that, you know, I think we will regret closing these two nuclear plants, we as the state of Illinois.
And Exelon officials have said in a news release they recognize the severe impact these closures have on the communities of Clinton and the Quad Cities and are working with civic leaders to prepare for that transition. What help might Exelon be able to offer?
You know, we've just been continuing to educate them over the last 2 years about these plants and, you know, the potential impact. So this is, you know, you can talk to them, Eric, but I'm sure this is not something that our community officials will be surprised by.
That was Clinton Nuclear Plant spokesman Brett Nauman on WJBC This Week. Where the Clinton Nuclear Plant's closure could be felt the most would be the Clinton School District, as the Exelon plant represents about half of the school district's property tax base. Clinton School Superintendent Kurt Nettles talked with WJBC's Terry James this week.
My initial reaction, I guess, is I hate to see it. It's a very sad day for DeWitt County and the community of Clinton. A lot of people are very upset about it, and a lot of people are extremely worried about it. So it's a gut check.
Well, Mr. Nettles, the reason why I wanted to bring you on is because a significant portion of property taxes paid in goes to your school district. In fact, if my numbers are correct, the power plant pays $13 million annually, and $8.5 million of that, again, property taxes, goes to the school district?
Yeah, it depends on the year, basically, but you could say approximately $8 million or so from our local property taxes is coming from the plant itself. So they're pretty close to about 50% of the overall EAV of the school district.
I guess looking forward, there's lots of work to be done with the school board, lots of decisions to be made, but that's a lot to take that will be going away.
It is. And so Clinton School District is not a general state aid district. We're kind of on the alternative fund formula. So we get some general state aid, but not a lot of general state aid as in comparison to other school districts because of our high EAV. But obviously with the closing of the plant and over a couple of years, that property wealth is going to de-escalate, and we're going to see a decline in that, so general state aid theoretically should go up. So we would become a general state aid dependent school district, more or less, which, you know, a lot of school districts in the area are dependent on general state aid. So that's going to be quite a bit of a change, and there will be have to be some changes probably on how we do things.
Well, I mean, the state, first of all, the state doesn't even have a plan on how it's going to fund the next year. Has that been a worry for your district as it has been others?
Yeah, right now we get about $1.4 million in general state aid, which $1.4 million is a lot of money. Could our district have done without that the last couple of years? I guess the answer to that would probably be yes, but going forward, becoming more dependent on general state aid with the imminent closure of the plant, it's very worrying. It's something that we've monitored over this year, and of course I monitored my previous job almost on a daily basis. We're very worried about that, concerned about what's going on. Our government is in disarray. They can't figure out how to fund education or even the state at this point. I myself and a lot of people have absolutely no confidence in what's going on down there in Springfield, so I don't have any answers for that other than we're going to try and plan accordingly as to what it should be, you know, kind of trying to be optimistic that the state's going to get their act together here pretty soon and get us a state budget so we know what we have starting the next school year.
Well, and the amount of money you get from the state is really based on how many pupils are in seats there, and with a large portion of the population working at the plant. And, I know it's not the entire population, but there are quite a few people with well-paying jobs at the plant. They might have to move.
Well, there are approximately 700 employees at the plant. And what I have been told by Exelon officials over the past year or so and from other people that have lived here their entire lives and are involved in local government is that 200 of those 700 employees live in DeWitt County and in the community of Clinton, not necessarily maybe in the city of Clinton, but in DeWitt County. So 200 of those jobs? Yes. I don't know, you know, does that mean 200 families are going to have to pick up and move? Does that mean 200 families are going to be sitting here out of work? We don't know all the answers to those kinds of questions. We probably will see some mobility based on that. Definitely you're going to see less money spent in Clinton and in the county because of those high-paying jobs going away. But it's also going to affect Champaign County, Macon County, a little bit in McLean County, too, as the employees live in the Bloomington-Normal area, Champaign area, Decatur area, and obviously around Clinton and DeWitt County. So the impact of this plant's not just going to touch us, but it's going to touch everybody in a 3 or 4 county area. I don't know how long it'll take to see the exact effects of it, but it's going to happen. Our enrollment probably will go down. But we may also see an increase in low-income students, too, because of it.
You know, as you told me as we were booking the interview, it's fresh information, and the talks will definitely continue into the next year and coming years. So
yes, and one thing we want to avoid, I want to avoid personally, is saying too much about what we're going to do over the next year or two, because things could change. You know, I still retain a little bit of being optimistic that, you know, something could still happen. You know, this decision could be reversed. They have a timeline in which it could be reversed, but they do have to be responsible as a corporation and say, we're going to make this closure June 1st, 2017, and then they have to start. They're starting today, as far as I understand, going through the process of making this closure happen. But I know that they probably have some grace period in there in which they can pull back and reverse this decision. Of course, that's dependent on what's going on in Springfield. And we've talked, frankly, until we're blue in the face about funding for schools, legislation for energy, or whatever the cause or issue you may have. A lot of people have a lot of issues they would like to see happen in Springfield. And quite frankly, nothing gets done down there, and a lot of people are suffering because of it. School districts are suffering, social agencies, a lot of things are suffering because of the disarray in Springfield.
That was Clinton School Superintendent Kurt Nettles with Terry James. Illinois failed once again to enact a state budget before the May 31st deadline, meaning we could likely go an entire year without a spending plan in Springfield, and there's still no blueprint for what will happen come July 1st, as Governor Rauner and the Democratic legislative leaders remain at an impasse. Rauner wants economic reforms. They want additional revenue. The governor scolded lawmakers as the budget deadline passed this week.
So we are calling on the General Assembly, don't wait. Don't hold our schools hostage. Don't hold our government operations hostage. Don't hold the people of Illinois hostage. Pass these two bills now to bring stability to our state while we continue to negotiate in good faith on reforms through the working groups, and we get through this crisis. Hopefully we can come to a broad compromise before the general elections. We're going to try to do that. We will try every day, 7 days a week. But President Cullerton has indicated that really the time will ultimately come down to next winter after the election. So we've got to take action now to get us through to next winter.
Meanwhile, State Senator Jason Berrickman weighed in on the budget mess and hopes for an agreement as he talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin this week.
What's your take on all of it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's certainly been a frustrating go for a year or more now, but this last week was, I think, the epitome of it. And I do think, you know, in that last week, now we adjourned Tuesday night, the 31st, so 2 days ago, we adjourned it, you know, midnight or something. I think we got very close in those final session days to, you know, a deal. I think there was significant movement. You know, I've talked with you about the working groups. These were the right. The meetings of rank and file members that had been, you know, been conducted for more than a year. But in these last few months, we had a series of meetings every week, and those things had a lot of progress. I mean, that was rank and file members, both sides, sitting down and saying, you know, where can we find agreement on the budget and a whole host of very controversial items. Those meetings progressed so significantly that, you know, Madigan first came out and said, there's no progress. I think his own members went to him and said, hey, buddy, yes, there is. So then Madigan really inserted his senior leadership team and himself ultimately in these. And the whole process that was, you know, really moving in this very positive direction got derailed in the final hours leading up to our adjournment on Tuesday night.
So you're saying eliminate the Speaker of the House, eliminate the governor, and you guys would have had a deal.
I really do think so. I think rank and file members want to see this, you know, this lengthy stalemate resolved, and I think we're willing to set aside whatever political and personal disagreements we may all have. And, you know, roll up our sleeves and say, okay, how do we do this? And, you know, when it's politics, personalities do matter. We are, you know, we're all aware of the feud between Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan. I mean, that's not new. But I don't think it just wasn't helpful when Madigan specifically entered those discussions. I felt we took a big step backwards, not forwards. And that's very unfortunate.
Let's just focus on Madigan. Who's the last governor Madigan got along with? He didn't get along with Quinn. He didn't get along with Blagojevich. Those guys never talked. And, you know, Governor Rauner stood up there at a news conference the other day and basically said what I've been saying. We've had 30 years of the Democrats running things, the Madigans, And look what the state of the state. Unemployment is the highest in the country. Property taxes highest in the country. We can't pass a budget, a balanced budget. And here Madigan tries to come up with a budget that's $7 billion over. And he has we're going to add $7 billion to this budget. We don't know how we're going to pay for it yet. Why does he think that stuff's going to fly?
You know, and I know I've said this before, you know, to Madigan's term, he's been in office, I'm sure I've used this with you and your listeners before, he's been in office longer than I've been alive. And when that reality sinks in with people, I think they're really stunned by it. You know, who has Madigan gotten along with? I have no idea. I have only served under Governor Rauner and Governor Quinn, and what I've always said about Quinn was, he was just irrelevant to the whole process. You know, he wasn't a part of the governance structure. He was just out there being governor when the legislature passed whatever they passed. He, and you know, opined, I suppose, but he just wasn't there. Rauner, you know, and Rauner's not, you know, Rauner is not innocent in all of this. I'm not trying to portray that. But I do think that he has stood up to Madigan. And he has, you know, if you really think about what Rauner's trying to do, he's trying to say, look, there's two branches. They're called co-equal branches of government, the legislative and the executive. We all learn this stuff in eighth grade, you know, government class. And Rauner's saying, look, the legislature has two paths forward. Either they can work with me and the two branches can compromise with one another, or the legislature really can go it alone. I mean, the Constitution gives them that right with the supermajority control that Madigan has. They can do that, you know, if they can't find a way to compromise. This thing needs to end is the bottom line. And, you know, even now today, we've got a proposal out there. I went to many different towns around the state yesterday promoting the plan that we put in place that does two things. And this is a bill with Berkman's name behind it, but it does two things. One, it keeps our government open for about six more months. It's called a stopgap procedure. It is not a long-term solution, but it is a short-term one that can keep the lights on. And the second component is a school funding bill. And I've told you before, I'm very concerned about whether or not our school districts are going to be able to open this fall. That is not a idle threat right now. That is a very real possibility. And we need to give assurances to the education community, the parents, and the kids that the schools are going to open this fall. So we put a bill out that funds the school formula completely. There's no proration or anything like that. And it makes sure no school districts lose money last year to this year. That bill could be adopted overnight in the legislature. And if we did that, we'd send a loud message to everyone that, hey, we get it. We got to make sure the schools are open this fall. I think we can get there still, Scott, but you know we're clearly not there this morning.
Is this what Cullerton was talking about? He said he could have something done to take you into the new year within a week.
Yeah, that's the same
right.
measure. So, now the details of that will matter, right? I mean, if you saw the budget put forward by the Democrats, mind you, even the Madigan Democrats couldn't agree with the Cullerton Democrats on Tuesday night as to how they wanted to do their own budget. So in this stunning twist where everyone thought Democrats were fighting with Republicans, what you saw was Democrats fighting with one another, and they basically entered a bidding war where one side was trying to outbid the other for who could send more money to Chicago public school system. I mean, it was ridiculous. So that didn't pass. I think that was healthy for the state and for taxpayers. But, yeah, today I think Cullerton has suggested a very reasonable path forward, and I think we'll continue to try to work with him to agree on what that stopgap is, how the schools open, and hopefully Madigan will finally come along.
That was State Senator Jason Berrickman with Scott Laughlin. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. The governing body for Illinois high school athletics has a new man in charge. Craig Anderson, the former football coach and athletic director at Olympia and Washington High Schools, took over for Marty Hickman, who retired earlier this year. Anderson discusses player safety, recruiting, and what new sports could be on the horizon in Illinois as he talks with WJBC's Brian Bloodworth this week.
Of course, the big thing in the news today is the concussions.
Yes, it is, and it continues to be. I feel like we're in a really good spot when it comes to concussions with the education that we've provided out there. You know, we've worked with the state legislator to bring forth laws that require our officials, along with our coaches, encouraging parents and students to become aware of concussions. And so I think we're in a better place than we've ever been. The game of football that gets a lot of the notoriety in regards to concussions has been, brought to the forefront, but again, I think with equipment and the way our coaches have been educated to teach technique, we're much improved to where we were years ago.
Your visions as you move forward in this position?
Yeah, initially, early on, you know, I just want to support our member schools. A lot of people think I just say that we dictate the rules, we establish the rules, but we really don't. It's all about our schools. And we want to support our member schools. They establish our rules. We're just here to make sure our schools abide by the rules and help present that fair and equitable competition amongst schools. So we just want to, in my opinion, my role would be to continue in supporting that. And when there are opportunities to interject and provide additional resources or provide opportunities to educate, that we do that to our membership. So, you know, that initially getting started, I want to get a feel for where our schools are at in regards to our rules. And if we can do things to gather them, to support them, to maybe make changes where it seems like we need to, then that's a direction we'll go.
Do you find that it's easier or harder to police schools as far as people talk about recruiting and maybe kids that aren't in the district and that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, in this day and age, even the short time I've been in this seat, parents will do some really crazy things to get their kids an opportunity somewhere else. And so I think it's more difficult to police a lot of that. You know, generally our schools do a nice job. We have good relationships with administrators across the state, and many of them are very familiar with our rules. And so they're on top of things they can and can't do. But when parents want to slide a rule or manipulate a rule, they generally can, and you know, at times there's not a lot we can do about that, but yet you know, we work to stay within the guidelines of what our schools tell us, and so that's where we're going to be.
And recently you added lacrosse to your plate of already numerous activities and sports. Any other sports coming down the line you see? I mean, is there discussion with anything?
You know, not really on the forefront. You know, every now and then we'll hear about some other things that kids are starting to participate in. You know, I had a group that came in and talked about girls wrestling, that we maybe have enough girls that are participating in wrestling to allow them to have their own state series. So we'll take a look at those numbers to see where that's at. But, you know, lacrosse was the most recent, and, you know, we're excited about in 2018 to have a state series in lacrosse. And so a lot of work we'll go into from now until then to prepare for that. But excited about expanding that opportunity for kids.
Are most of the lacrosse teams up in this northern part of the state right now?
You know, there's a large number of them are in the northeast corner, but we do have some in the metro east area down in the Edwardsville, East St. Louis, O'Fallon area. But then even in central Illinois, I don't know that they're into our schools yet, but there's a lot of club teams, Bloomington Normal here, Peoria area. And so I think what we'll find within a couple years into our lacrosse state series, once we've established it, that those teams will move to school teams, whether they'll be co-op teams maybe to help generate some competition or provide opportunities for kids. But that's something that I think we'll continue to see growth in. We've seen it on the youth level, and I think now it's going to transition into the high school level.
That was new IHSA Director Craig Anderson with Brian Bloodworth, the first and, to this point, only athletic director in Heartland Community College's history. Nate Metzger announced this week that he is resigning. This came after the school essentially cut the athletic director position as part of a campus-wide cost-cutting plan in which 23 jobs were eliminated. Under Metzger's guidance, the Hawks baseball team won 80% of its games in 9 seasons and 3 times advanced to the National Junior College World Series. Metzger talked with WJBC's Adam Stasinski this week.
Explain why you made this decision to resign.
Once the AD position was done away with, cut back in March or that decision was made, the AD position was 80% of my overall salary. So to stay, and do the baseball thing just wasn't going to be a feasible, option, in terms of taking care of, providing for, my family. Quite honestly, it really, that's kind of what it came down to. And even though, administration had said, that was an option for me to stay that way, I think we all knew that really wasn't, that really wasn't a viable option.
What happens next for you? What are some of the options that you're looking at for your future career?
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's exciting, on one hand to find out what is next and try to maintain, that outlook on it. Extremely difficult to leave what, was literally, built. I think that makes it harder, the fact that it was a situation where, we built this thing from the ground up, and certainly, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into, getting it to the level or to the point, that it is. And so, but at this, like I said, you try to remember the positives and what we did build and what we did do and what we were able to accomplish, those kinds of things. And, certainly John Astroff, who hired me and, took a chance and provided the trust level that he did, he deserves all the credit. But to try to find, what's next, again, kind of exciting as well, just to see what the future holds. I've applied for, 3 or 4 jobs. I think there are going to be more coaching jobs that shake out. I've got a hand in scouting with the Braves, since like 96, and, that certainly is an option or could be an option as well. Definitely want to stay in the game, in some capacity, and I feel like that's just kind of what I am. So, hoping to stay in the game, at some level.
Could you talk a bit more about the effort that went into building the Heartland Athletic Program from the ground up?
Right. I mean, you know, back in the summer of 2006, you know, when John Ashcroft, you know, took a chance on me and hired me to, you know, to get this thing off the ground and start building, like, I mean, I always say, you know, you come in 06 and, you know, you work off of, you know, you go to the filing cabinet, pull out the contract for officials to work off of. Not only is there there's no contract for officials, there's no filing cabinet, you know, so, you know, literally to, you know, from facilities to, you know, the programs, you know, themselves, you know, everything about, you know, that opportunity was kind of a dream come true. And the way John, you know, John's whole philosophy is, hey, you know, we're going to do this. You know, we're going to do it right. We're not going to, you know, cut corners and you know, we really want to put our best foot forward. And I think that's, you know, that's the beauty of what was set in motion, you know, by John and through John and certainly what we were able to do for, you know, an extended period of time. And again, just disappointing to, you know, see that, you know, that philosophy, that mindset kind of, you know, change over the years and now, you know, evolve into a situation where, you know, again, obviously cutting the athletic director position, you know, does not allow, you know, me to stay as baseball coach and, you know, continue to contribute the way, you know, the way it's been.
We're speaking with Nate Metzger, who announced this week he's resigning as the Heartland Community College baseball coach. Nate, this decision by the Heartland Board of Trustees to cut the athletic director position was obviously not something that they decided to do easily, but this has obviously forced you to make another decision with your career being that you lost 80% of your salary. So is there any hard feelings that you leave behind as you're somewhat forced to make this decision in your life?
Well, I think anytime you're faced with, you know, a decision that one, you know, you don't necessarily agree with, too, that you certainly didn't ever want to have to deal with. You know, Heartland's never been a stepping stone for me where, oh, I'm trying to get to the Division I level or, you know, the next step, whatever that might be. You know, it was a place where, you know, I've been in Bloomington Normal. My wife and kids and I have been here for, you know, almost 20 years. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to priority and value. And, you know, where there's priority and value, you know, there's a way to sustain it. And, you know, obviously, you know, that's the tough reality, you know, of the situation. Even though, you know, I had no intention of ever leaving or going anywhere else, you know, obviously the vision that, you know, administration, the board, chose to, you know, to take on this, you know, was different, you know, was just that different. So, you know, yeah, it's definitely a tough pill, bitter pill to swallow, in terms of having to move on rather than, you know, choosing necessarily to move on.
That was outgoing Heartland Hawks athletic director and baseball coach Nate Metzger with Adam Stasinski. And Illinois Wesleyan is celebrating a national title again this week. The Titans topped the field in women's track for the program's third national title. There were also four individual champs from Illinois Wesleyan, as Brian Bloodworth talked with the Titans coach Chris Schumacher this week.
Chris, congratulations on another national championship, and now we find out you're Coach of the Year again.
Well, the Coach of the Year is really a credit to, you know, historically going back to some of the really strong athletes that kind of got the program going, and then we had a tremendous coaching staff. This is the first year we've ever had all of the events covered, from the pole vault to the throws, and it really made a difference in the momentum going into the conference championships and then into the national championships.
Talk about the program. And when you came here, did you envision it? I mean, I know you hoped that it would get to this level, but what were your thoughts coming in, and how did you build it to where it is now?
When I first arrived, you know, I thought it could be a place that could be successful because of the facilities and the strong academic reputation. But to think that we could win not one national championship but multiple was really beyond anything that I could have imagined, because I know how difficult it is with the strong the Wisconsin Conference and some of the East Coast schools, some of the other schools that have had that success. So for Illinois Wesleyan to be on that mountaintop is pretty surreal.
Where does this one rank of the three? I mean, was this the more surprising of the three or not?
It's probably the most surprising. I mean, we were ranked number one during the indoor season, and we ended up getting second. And then going into the outdoor meet, we were fourth on paper, so to speak. But the way we got it done, this one ranks at the top simply because we had more people involved. We had more people to celebrate with, more coaches, and more people just as part of it.
What carried you to that championship? Obviously, a lot of good all-around performances, but anything in particular?
The belief that we could get it done because we had some areas that did not go as expected, but because of the number of participants and people believing that they could contribute to a championship, some big things happened in other areas.
Talk about some of your individuals.
Molly McGraw, local from town here, had a big PR in the right moment and won the national championship. Amelia Glick from Tremont, so also pretty local, set the school record. Both her and Molly both broke the school record, and she became a national champion, so two sophomores.
What events were they in?
Long jump for Amelia and high jump for Molly. And then we had a couple senior captains who had their finest moment in their last events. Nia Joyner, she was a 60-meter indoor champion. She ended up getting huge second place for us in the 100. And then Jill Harmon got third in the triple jump. She went in seated seventh, but she had a big lifetime best in a really critical moment. And all of those added up to make the difference.
Of course, that's always good to see a senior have it go out like that, isn't it?
Absolutely, especially seniors who you invested a lot of time in, and they invested back in the program, and it really does not get any better than that.
That was Illinois Wesleyan track coach Chris Schumacher with Brian Bloodworth. The Week in News is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Week in News. Closing the Clinton nuclear plant would affect more than just Clinton and DeWitt County. Following the announcement that Exelon plans to close its facility in Clinton in June of next year, State Senator Chapin Rose says there's more at stake than good-paying jobs.
I'll be really clear. These jobs are extremely important to our economy. But the entire future of Downs, Illinois is at stake here, because if you lose 20% of the power on the grid on any given day of the week, that will be a massive rate hike on consumers that live well outside of Clinton, DeWitt County, in central Illinois.
Rose spoke along with the state representative Bill Mitchell, saying that the fight to save the plant isn't over. They're still working to pass legislation to provide financial relief to the plant. It's been 6 months since a vehicle has been produced at the Mitsubishi Motors plant in Normal. This past Tuesday was the final day for the small number of workers who stayed behind to finish odds and ends of the plant. Maynard's Industries has purchased the plant and has taken possession of the site. The new company owner tells the WJBC if they find a buyer, the public may not know until it's a done deal. He says if there is an auction, it will be advertised nationally. The new owner says the 2.5 million square feet size of the 28-year-old building might be the biggest obstacle in finding a buyer. State Senator Jason Berrickman says rank-and-file members of the state legislature were making progress on a budget compromise this week before the spring session ended, that is, until House Speaker Michael Madigan stepped in.
When Madigan specifically entered those discussions, I felt we took a big step backwards, not forwards.
The Republican Berrickman tells WJBC the increasingly dire financial condition of schools will likely force the legislature to agree on some sort of spending plan. And Illinois State University President Larry Dietz says the school is surviving despite the uncertainty stemming from the lack of a state budget. Still, Dietz says more certainty about state finances is vital.
As quickly as we can get a budget in place and we can get confidence that there is X amount of dollars that will be flowing to higher education in the future. Our history has been a strong history, and I think our future is bright, but we've got to get off of this dime and get some action and get a budget and move forward.
Deed says ISU's finances are in good shape for now, adding that a 3% tuition increase for incoming freshmen will help. Bloomington police are reminding drivers to keep their car doors locked after two teens reportedly burglarized at least 10 vehicles on the city's northwest side earlier this week. Police say they recovered some stolen items when they arrested an 18-year-old and 17-year-old, both from Bloomington, early Thursday morning. Bloomington police say if you notice something missing from your vehicle, to call their department at 820-8888. The annual May Community Challenge from Home Sweet Home Ministries in Bloomington met its $125,000 goal. CEO Mary Pullen says the public was able to match a $62,000 donation by a group of private donors. Pullen explains the funding will help the daily operations of the ministry.
We have typically about 50 adults and about 25 children staying here. And so each one of those family units receives case management services. So obviously we have the case management salaries. We're putting food on the table three times a day.
Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. It's time to take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, Normal's Town Council will meet to consider selling property on North School Street for construction of single-family homes. On Tuesday, the media will get a preview tour of Bloomington Normal's new birthing center that is set to open soon. It would be the second in Illinois and the first outside of Chicago. Also Tuesday, the Bloomington Normal YMCA will mark the association's 172nd birthday. And on Wednesday, the Unit 5 District 87 school boards will hold their first meetings of the summer. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Stock.